Okay, so let's now first start off with cluster analysis. So when we talk about cluster analysis, we are talking about single target groups. That means what I'll do is people with similar behavior, I will put them into a common group within our database. So it says enables identifying a given user group according to common features within our database. So when I do not have a particular option that needs to be predicted or a very precise answer that needs to be predicted, I will probably use something like cluster analysis to maybe define people of the same behavior pattern together. So like I said earlier, when we talk about customer segmentation and various bits of it, then I will use something like cluster analysis. So when we talk about machine learning models, this primarily goes into something we can known as unsupervised learning. Then you have regression analysis to make marketing forecasts. Now, when we have a definite output that needs to be predicted, like a customer churn, or maybe something like predicting the profit, the sales figures, then I would something use more towards a supervised learning model, which is regression analysis, where I understand what is my dependent variable and how each of the independent variables in the study impact my dependent variable. So an example that is clearly given here, impact on demand by changing price of a product, is something that you would need to understand, that if the price changes or drops, is the demand being impacted? Is the demand going up or is the demand going down? What is the impact? So you can also have something like the season predicting the price, because the demand in the season, like maybe the winters or the rainy season, something like that, which is a little on the colder side, I would have a lesser demand for maybe air conditioners and air coolers. So that time the price might be dropped to increase the sales of that particular product, while in seasons like summers, there would be a higher demand. And I would want to increase the price so that I make more profit at that time, because the product is anyway selling due to high demand. So that can be achieved through regression analysis. Then we have classification analysis. Basically, when I talk about classification, it's what it says over here is recognizing patterns, recurring schemas inside a database. So spam email, patterns of consumer behavior, so all possible certain email IDs or groups of certain email IDs, I would just put it as spam. So all the spam filtering that you see in your emails is an example of classification analysis. Anomaly detection to recognize any abnormalities. So is there a certain weird pattern that is there in the customer behavior? Certain things that are not right, or certain abnormalities that are not recognizable. Any anomalies that can be there, it might not be visible when I am trying to analyze the data, but the system can definitely detect those unnatural behaviors. Or so in a cybersecurity, connecting just random example to marketing analysis. So in something like cybersecurity, what would happen is what we call as user behavior analysis, where is the insider threat or the user doing something that they're not supposed to do in the system? So that would be an anomaly, and that could lead to maybe an attack or something that is not right and could be stopped. Again, we'd come to intrusion detection for greater system security. So it decontaminates the database and establishes greater security for the entire system. So you're detecting intrusions, you're detecting any breach in the security. So you can protect your database and put in a greater security for the entire system. Then association rule learning to discover links between the data. Like the name says, association rule. So what is the association between the various variables or the various parameters that are there between the data? Are we able to discover those hidden links in the data or in the variables in the data? Decision trees to optimize project risk management. That means basically I make an entire, like we used to have the family tree, now I use basically decision tree to understand what is the possible risk at which part the risk can occur, and how can I take care or mitigate the risk before even if it occurs. So I can optimize the entire project risk management based on the use of decision trees. So after decision trees, we come to neural networks, basically to automate learning. So what does neural networks talks about is the word neural comes from the neurons that are there in the brain. It is said that the brain, when the brain is trying to process, like y'all are sitting on the screen and watching the video, so y'all are able to see the screen, me making movements and my mouth moving, and still hear me talking. So your brain is processing all this information simultaneously at the same time, which in our AI technology becomes very complex to automate. So that's the reason we come to neural networks, where we say it breaks it down into layers and processes one layer at a time, finally coming to the automated process. So this entire automated learning is basically done by neural networks, where it takes the data and it tries to build its own learning, its own transition curve from that entire process. Then we have induction rule for predictive analysis, which is an ML technique used for discovering patterns and relationships in the data. It involves extracting logical rules from a data set that can be used to make prediction to gain insights about the data. So what am I doing? I'm trying to predict something. So the data itself, through the induction rule, is able to discover patterns, relationships on how the dependent and the independent variables work, how they affect each other in a certain way. All these logical rules from the data set are basically already derived by the induction rule, and then the data derived by the induction rule can be used to gain insights about the data. Data storage in warehouses for big data processing. So this is very simple. Like I said, we actually accumulate the data, clean out the data, and basically store the data in huge data warehousing platforms so that the entire data can be processed. Then you have text mining. So these are all part of, so we had gone through certain rules, data mining techniques. These are additional data mining techniques that we have to speak about. Then we have text mining, where I'm able to basically extract insight from text data. So social media comments, customer reviews, survey responses. I'm able to understand whether the customer has something called, as an example of text mining, is sentiment analysis. How does the customer feel about my particular brand or my particular product? What is the sentiment that he holds or she holds? Then time series analysis, which is basically analyzing data over a period of time to see what is the pattern, what is the trend. So what does it help with? How can I forecast sales? Understand how seasons affect, and how can I optimize marketing budgets. So we finished speaking about with the various data mining techniques that we have. Now let us talk about the various data cleaning techniques. Missing data. So when we have missing data, I could have basically columns of missing data, I could have rows of missing data, and or I could just have a cell which, or a particular value in a particular question, which is missing the data completely. So if the missing data is minimum, like it is a particular cell or a particular question, then I might choose to keep it there. I might choose to either keep it as missing, or I might choose to replace it with another value, but it would not affect the overall integrity of the data set. When it is minimum, I might choose not to delete the row or the column that contains the data unless there are too many inconsistency. Deleting columns ideally means that I basically remove the entire field. So if there is too much data missing in that particular column, I can check how important is that particular data set column to my entire data. Are the variables affecting the rest of the data in a large way? If not, then I might choose not to include that column in the analysis. I might not choose to delete it, but then I might still choose not to include it when I'm doing my machine learning model or my predictive analysis. Deleting rows basically would mean almost in every data, single row presents a single respondent, or a single entry or single record in the data. Now, again, if it is just for a particular value or a particular question or particular variable that there is no missing data, then I might choose to keep that respondent as it is, because if I delete the respondent, the number of entries that are there in my database will probably reduce. But if the respondent has multiple missing values at multiple variables or multiple questions, I might choose to delete that record altogether. Here, yes, I will need to delete it, because it is not possible not to include a certain respondent or a certain analysis in the data. So I might choose to remove it completely out of the data set. In some other cases, if there is missing data and I choose to keep the record with the missing data, I might choose to also either keep it as a missing value or replace it with another value or a value that has more options in them. Or maybe with a higher value, lower value, depending on where exactly the data is present. Then coming to imputation, which is filling in missing values with estimated or imputed values, like I just talked about. So common imputation, mean imputation, so I replace it with a mean value. Then I have median imputation, where I replace it with a median. Mode imputation, where I replace it with the mode. Ideally, mean, median, mode would give us approximate answers, especially if your data is not very largely screened. The ideal scenario is where the mean, median, and mode are identical, because they all represent the center point in the data and through different calculation, but depending what you want to do. Or I can even, for that matter, use a regression model, because regression allows me to, like we discussed earlier just some time back, that it allows me to predict specific values. So I can use missing values based regression model to predict missing values based on other variables, or I can basically use regression model to get the exact value or get the exact predicted value for that particular missing data. Then I have outliers. How do I deal with outliers? So we have something called as a visual inspection. So for outliers, I would use something like it mentions over here, box plots, scatter plots, histograms, which will tell me what the extreme values are, and they are very clearly visually identifiable by using this kind of graphing techniques or visualization techniques. Another way of doing it is basically checking the Z-scores or the IQR to basically identify the outliers, values that fall beyond a certain threshold outside of the plus 3-7 deviations. So when you ideally plot a data, you should get a smooth bell curve. So your plus 3 deviation is at 5%. So anybody falling out of that will have a problem with the outliers. So you might want to, again, there would be various methods to deal with the outliers also. So they could either be called outliers or they could be extreme values. Then we have something called as Windsorization or the truncation technique, where what I do is, so like we discussed right now, outliers are something that fall outside of your threshold that you have. So suppose if I have an age threshold of maybe my maximum respondents fall between the age group of 18 to maybe 45 or maybe 50, and all of a sudden I have certain people who have answered 98, 99, 95, 96. So these all become my outliers in my data. The number of outliers is ideally very small. So you might want to replace it by a 50 or a 55, depending on what is your threshold value of that. So it could either be the minimum or maximum. Right now we've considered the people outside the maximum, so we are replacing it with the maximum. So what does that does, instead of deviating or skewing my data towards, because the mean and median values will deviate based on these values of these outliers, you would see it normally when you have your grade calculation, your percentage calculation. If you have done badly in one particular subject and done really well in all the other subjects, that even that single low value will tend to pull your average to a lesser side. So you want to maybe, in our case, obviously in our grades, we cannot just replace the value with the maximum value that we get. But otherwise, we can replace it with that maximum value and get that extreme value within the range. Makes it us to keep the respondent before, instead of just removing them out completely from the data. Then we have data transformation that we have. So what do I do in data transformation? Data validation rules, which is establish rules or constraints that the data must adhere to. For example, defining ranges for numerical variables or specifying the allowed categories for categorical variables, identifying and flagging results that violate the rules for further investigation. Now, like we just discussed, let's suppose my range is 18 to maybe 65 and I have values between 19 or 98. So what I can do over here in an ideal scenario, I can set up data validation rules. So nobody beyond 65 will be answered, or I can set up a screening criteria where anyone beyond the age of 65 should not be allowed to answer the rest of the survey, or should not be given a criteria that this is not for you people, or we can give them an error message to enter another value. So this would normally happen when you try to enter your email address, especially now that most of quite a few organizations where they mention your work email. So your work email would not have a domain, ideally would not have a domain like gmail.com or maybe yahoo.com or live.com. So in that case, what you would do, it would validate what is the domain you're using. So that means it would have a predefined list of domains, and it would say if it your email address falls under any of those public domains, then it would say this is not a proper work email address. So those are data validation that can be ruled. Anything, so when I'm doing a data check and there is no way for me to set up these data validation rules initially itself, I will basically run those data validation rules and flag respondents that are violating these rules and telling, boss, there is a problem over here. I can also flag them, like it says over here, for viewing them later. Then I have basically cross-field verification. That is, compare the values of different fields to identify any inconsistency. For example, if the data set has with age and birth date, you can check if the calculated age matches the given birth date. So this is the ideal example. Or if you have a date of joining and years of experience, your years of experience cannot exceed your date of joining. Or so suppose it cannot be less than your date of joining, because the date of joining minus current would at least give you the tenure in the company, and it cannot be less than the total experience that you have. So things like this, that you can set up cross-field validations. Or your age cannot be less than your years of experience, things like that that I could set up. Then I have something called as a manual inspection. So what am I doing? Carefully examine the data for any obvious inconsistency. This can involve looking for spelling errors, data entry mismatches, illegal consistencies in the data. Okay, so manual inspection could be something as, when you go into the computer language, uppercase M for male and a lowercase m for male is treated as two different entries. Similarly, for the F for female. So you might want to set up, instead of having male female like 3-4 times, instead of two, you could set it to maybe just two entries, male and female, and in case there is some other entry than that, this is some inconsistency that you can view. The choice of techniques depends on the nature of the data, the amount of missing data, the significance of outlier, and the domain specific knowledge you possess. So if I, like I said, ideally when I reject respondents, and this is comes from years of working with data also, what would we do? We would never reject a respondent based on, or a respondent based on one criteria, that if he's outlier or if he's has missing data. We would check for a series of options. Is he outlier in one question, flatliner in the other question? Is his average survey time lesser than what it, the average time that is there. So all of these parameters together, when we see the respondent is failing and multiple criteria that you have set or multiple questions, validation rules, then probably I would reject the respondent. So this what I'm talking about is the last point, which is the domain specific knowledge possessed. So you would know how to deal with missing data, outliers, and all of that. It's just not randomly about rejecting the data or removing the respondent from the database. So what does data transformation involve? It involves applying mathematical or statistical operation to modify the original data to make it more suitable for analysis. So what is the first thing that we do is log transformation, which is taking the logarithmic of data values, is useful when original data has a skewed distribution. It compresses the range of the values and reduces the impact of extreme values, making the data more symmetric. So like I was saying earlier, in an ideal scenario, the mean, median, and mode, ideally those are three different ways to calculate the midpoint, should ideally be the same. That is when I get the perfect bell curve. But that is not always the ideal scenario. And based on the values in your data, you would have data that is the curve that is shifted more towards the left or shifted to the right. And you get a very skewed distribution. So in that case, what I would do, instead of directly taking the actual values, I would take the log values of the data and see if taking the log values gets my data more symmetric rather than being more skewed due to the extreme values. Then you have something called as power transformation. Like similar to log, I can use the power, which is square, cube, 4, 5, depend what I want to use. So raising the data to a specific power, which is power transformation. So it helps again in adjusting the distribution of the data. Like we say, no, for the hypotenuse, the hypotenuse is equal to the square of the two sides, or the hypotenuse square is the square of the two sides. Why? Because you're taking care of the using power transformation over here and adjusting the distribution of the data. Then you have something we call as standardization. What does standardization do? Transform data to the zero mean and unit variance by subtracting the mean and dividing by the standard deviation. It ensures that the variables with different scales are on a similar scale, which is using an algorithm method that assume normally distributed variables. So I would, when I talk about standardization, I would bring it all down to a common scale or a common base, and thus change the values a bit so that I get a standardized variable rather than the normal distribution. Then we have something called as binning. So binning involves dividing a continuous into a set of discrete bins or categories. It simplifies the data and makes it usable with exact values are not as important as the category they fall into. So the most common example for binning that we would have would be age, where at most of the times, in most of the study, you will see age is not a very important. Age in itself, that individual value is not very important. So I can put them into bins of like maybe 18 to 24, 25 to 34, 35 to 44, or it could be 18 to 34, depending on the kind of categories that you're looking for, which is more important than the actual value of the age. It could have for your income, it could happen for the number of members in your household. So your household size, it could empower for your organization size. This is all cases where binning is used most of the time. Then you have dummy coding. What is dummy coding? It's used to represent categorical variables as binary variables, 0, 1. It creates additional binary columns, each representing a category of the original variables. This transformation enables the inclusion of categorical variables in models that require numerical inputs. So now at times what I can do is, suppose I have all the gadgets at the, or today over a period of time, if I talk about any telecommunications data or any organization that you've been with, my handsets would change over a period of time. And probably the organization or my telecoms would definitely store the information about the handsets, maybe something like the IMEI number. Now, what I can do is, instead of having all the names of the handsets, I can probably just check, put a 0-1 value, that I can just categorize all the handsets together, remove duplicates, I have a unique list of handsets, and if I have used the handset, I can put a 1, or for the rest, put a 0. So it rather becomes a multi-response question than an ideally categorical option, which will have multiple inputs. So now we are going to talk about the various data normalization techniques. So how can I normalize the data, or how can I scale down numerical data to a specific range or a specific distribution so that it gives me better results and better values that are there? So when I talk about data normalization, so what is the definition? First, let's look at it. It is a process of scaling numerical data to a specific range or distribution. The goal is to bring different variables into a common scale to avoid biases caused by different units or scales of measurement. Normalization ensures that no single variable dominates the analysis solely based on its scale. So when I'm talking about data normalization, what am I talking about now? I would have currency, maybe I have multiple currency. I would have certain currency in INR, or I would have grades and other things. So it would all be on different scales, where I can have currency in INR or maybe USD or European dollar, pounds, and all of that. So how do I get everything to a common scale? So that is where I use the normalization technique. So we are going to discuss a couple of normalization techniques that we have over here. The first one is min-max scaling. So what does min-max scaling do? Is also known as feature scaling. Rescales the data to a fixed range, typically between 0 and 1. It subtracts the minimum value and divides by the range, maximum minus minimum, and it preserves the original distribution that adjusts the scale. So what does it do? It firstly, min-max scaling can only be done when you have a range. It would not work for outliers in your data, so it has to be within the range of the min and max values, because it literally magnifies. If you use this process where scaling technique, normalization technique, when there are outliers in the data, then what is going to happen is your data is not going to look right, or it will give you a problem, especially with the outliers or the extremes in the data. So what do I do over here is, now suppose I have a range of minus 10 to 30. So my minimum value becomes minus 10 and my maximum becomes 30. So how does this work is basically, and these are approximate figures, you can probably take out a calculator and calculate them. So if suppose I have a value like 18.8. So if I say 18.8 minus of minus 10, which makes it 18.8 plus 10. So that is the first part. That is my numerator, which makes it 28.8. Now my second says is divided by the range. The denominator needs to be divided by the range, which is maximum minus minimum. So it will be 30 minus of minus 10. Again, it becomes plus. So it is 30 plus 10, which makes it 40. So my numerator is now 28.8 and my denominator is 40. Now, if I subtract these values, divide these values, I will get roughly a value of, if I'm not mistaken, 0.73 or 0.75. Now, what has happened is that value is now between 0 and 1. That is the range it is in. So whenever I'm using min-max scaling, that's what it will do, where I mention over here, it rescales the data to a fixed range, typically between 0 and 1. So even though it maintains my data points or the distance of the data points, it just reduces them to a value between 0 and 0.1, which is like we saw, 0.75, which makes it 0.1. So that is min-max scaling. Then we have what we call as Z-score standardization. So what is the technique called? It is, what does the technique do? Called Z-score normalization transforms the data to have a zero mean and unit standard deviation. It subtracts the mean and divides by the standard deviation useful when the distribution is approximately normal and preserves the shape of the original distribution? So when I talk about z-score normalization, we said ideally if my data distribution is right or in perfect scenario, it will form a perfect bell curve. That means my mean, median, mode, all three will be very close or identical to each other. Now, what do I do? Basically, when I have a data which still has the bell curve, but I want the, so the distribution has to be very close, where distance between the mean, median, mode has to be very close, then I will still use the z-score standardization to basically maintain that. And what will I do? Very similar to min-max value, I will have to have a zero mean and unit standard deviation. So I will subtract the value from the mean and divide it by the standard deviation. So that way I'll get the z-score standardization. I can't give you an example because the standard deviation will have to be a calculation of values. So it will depend on the scale, then you will need to calculate the standard deviation before applying the z-score standardization. Then we come to decimal scaling. What do we do in decimal scaling? Scale the data by shifting the decimal point to 2 of each value. The number of decimal places shifted on the maximum depends on the maximum absolute value in the data. This data technique maintains the relative ordering of values but reduces the range. Obviously, because if when I'm moving the decimal values, it's a very simple technique. When I'm moving the decimal values, what is going to change is the value of my data is going to change. So what I'm doing is when I have an extremely wrong rate, I can reduce the range by moving the decimal values. It's like converting maybe meters to kilometers to reduce the range. So something that would be coming in thousands of kilometers or meters would be 1 kilometer. So I can definitely then do that with a decimal scaling. So those are the three normalization techniques that we talk about. So normalization and data transformation techniques are applied based on the characteristics of the data, the requirements of the analysis or modeling task, and they play a crucial role in enhancing data quality, enabling meaningful comparisons and improving the performance of analytical methods. Now, when it comes to data transformation and normalization, ideally, you would not apply normalization in everything and anything. It purely depends that is the data in your study having different scales? Do I need to get it? Is there a requirement basically to get it to one scale? That's when I'll apply the data normalization technique. And on that analysis, does the modeling task require me to bring the data to a common scale, or does it need any sort of normalization that needs to be done? Understand? When you are doing a normalization, you're basically tweaking the data. Provided, even though you're doing with a code, if you use the wrong technique, your data that code would be used for the modeling might be wrong and it would impact the performance of your model. So, where even though here we are talking about it enhancing the data quality and enabling meaningful comparison, you would need to check, is that even needed with your analytical method or the modeling task?